Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our study of the book, The Miracle of Forgiveness. And now we are in chapter 17, a chapter titled Charting a Safe Course. This chapter deals primarily with marriage. Now, if you know anything about Mormonism, you will know that marriage is a very important aspect of the Mormon faith because in Mormonism, exaltation is really a team effort. A husband and wife must be married for time and eternity if they hope to be together in the next life in order to practice a doctrine which is known as eternal increase or the doctrine of being able to procreate throughout eternity. So, Kimball, in this chapter, he's basically talking about how parents should guide their children in choosing the right mate. And on page 237, under the subtopic of Folly of Interfaith Marriages, this is what Kimball says. He says, "Our youth often ask the vital question, whom shall I marry? The proper answer to that question brings a proper answer to many others. If you marry the proper whom, you are sure to marry in the proper where, and you have an infinitely better chance of happiness here and in eternity." Now, of course, Eric, he's obviously saying that the proper whom would be a Mormon in good standing who is temple worthy, because the temple worthiness tells you where.
Yeah, and it's very clear in the next sentences, too, where he says, "By far the greatest cause of unhappiness, broken homes, wretched lives, sinfulness, and sorrow among the Latter-day Saints is the failure to marry the right person in the right place by the right authority." See, Mormons don't believe that the right place is doing that outside of the temple. And to be able to get in the temple, you have to have the temple recommend so that you can have the ordinance is done for you in your marriage so that you can learn the things you need to know as a couple, because then you can continue on into the celestial kingdom.
Now, again, this is one of those areas where, though I don't agree in temple marriage or anything like that, I do think Kimball is making some good points, because it is true that marriages between two people of different religious faiths tend to cause friction within that relationship. And I've got to be honest with you, I'm not a little disappointed, I'm a lot disappointed when I see Christians dating Latter-day Saints. I don't understand the logic behind this. You are asking for trouble.
Well, it's not fair on either end, because
exactly
what you're doing is you're dating, and you're probably really not thinking you're going to convert, but you certainly think the possibility of that other person converting. How selfish of you to date with this restriction that, well, if you want to continue this, you really need to come my way. And then the other person's going to fight for theirs. And so, you know, it just, and somebody might end up giving in. We see that, Bill, with couples that are mixed marriages, and somebody decides they're just too weak. They really don't care. They don't want to fight. They love the person too much. And so they end up getting married.
I have never liked the concept known as missionary dating. I have never liked that. I think it's deceptive. I don't think it's biblical. And I think any Christian who is purposely dating a Latter-day Saint for the purpose of hopefully converting them to Christianity is wrong. I think they should witness, and I think they should try to convert them, but using an emotional situation like that is not the way to do it. And as you said, Eric, it's not fair to the Latter-day Saint either. If you're acting, for instance, like you're interested in this person and maybe even interested in hearing what they say just so you can try to bring out a Christian message, you're misleading, and that's not fair to the other person.
I know somebody who's on the mission field right now for the Mormons who joined the church because of a girl, ended up breaking up before he went, but is on the mission field today because he converted just a couple of years ago. This is what Mark E. Peterson, an apostle, said in the 1950s. Listen to this. It was a fictional book that he wrote. This is it's called For Time or Eternity, and this is what he was saying, responding to a mother and a daughter, and the daughter's question, asking the mother, are other people's ideas of God so different? Here's what the mother asked, and the daughter, let me just give you a little background. She's thinking about dating a Gentile, somebody who's not LDS. Mm-hmm. And she says, the mother says, yes, very different. You do not know much about other people's religions because you have never attended any other church. But there are some so-called Christian churches which do not believe in God as a person at all. They think he is an essence, like an invisible cloud with no shape or substance, and that he is everywhere at once, yet in no place in particular. Many teach that God has neither body, parts, nor passions, which of course is the same as saying that he is not a person at all, but just some indefinite influence, and yet so small it can dwell in your heart. Can you see that you and Bob probably don't even worship the same God? I mean, right there, I mean, this is what Mark E. Peterson saw, and I would say the same thing. I agree with him. You don't worship the same God.
I would say his explanation of what Christians are is probably erroneous.
Oh, absolutely.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he set up a bunch of straw men in that paragraph to be able to make that work. But the Mormon God, the Mormon gospel, we're seeing this with this book, The Miracle of Forgiveness. This is not Christianity. So to be dating somebody who's not Christian and not on the same wavelength, you're asking for trouble.
Wouldn't you think, Christian, that you would want to marry another child of God? If you're not going to marry a child of God, what are you going to marry? Harry Ironside, who was a Canadian-American Bible teacher, he was a preacher, a pastor, a theologian, and an author. Harry Ironside said this. He said, if you are a child of God and you marry a child of the devil, you can expect to have trouble with your father-in-law. And how true that is. Yeah. And sadly, we have seen this. If you could read some of the emails that I have received over the years from Christians who are just heartbroken because they ended up marrying a Latter-day Saint. And again, we're not saying that the Latter-day Saint that they married was a bad person or an immoral person or anything like that. In many cases, that's not really the situation. What we're saying, though, is you have two different, entirely different worldviews that are clashing in what should be one of the most intimate relationships you can possibly ever have here on earth. And unfortunately, because there is not that spiritual intimacy between the two, the relationship suffers immensely. I think one of the greatest things about my marriage to my wife is because we are in one mind and one accord when it comes to spiritual issues. That draws us closer. There's no friction on that. Does it mean that we agree on every little aspect of everything? No, of course not. We're humans. But still, when it comes to the spiritual issues, we understand what is the primary source of our beliefs, the Word of God.
And
we always go back to that.
And Bill, you knew how to raise your kids, and you were able to instruct them in the same way without hearing conflicting things and not having a fight over which church we're going to go to this week. Spencer Kimball, we said yesterday we're going to agree with him when he says something right, and I agree with what he says here on page 241. He says, do not take the chance of dating non-members or members who are untrained and faithless. A girl may say, oh, I do not intend to marry this person. It's just a fun date. But one cannot afford to take a chance on falling in love with someone who may never accept the gospel. True, a small percentage have finally been baptized after marrying church members. Some good women and some good men have joined the church after the mixed marriage and have remained devout and active. And he goes on and says, that's fine, but it's not always going to happen. I always say, as far as dating, because I taught for 17 years at the high school level, and I'd have a lot of kids who would want to date outside the faith. And they say, come on, Mr. Johnson, what's so wrong with it? I'm a Christian. I know what I'm doing. I said, and I'm not going to marry the person. I always heard that. Well, I'm never going to marry them. And I always like to ask them, is it more likely that you're going to marry somebody you've dated or not dated? Mm-hmm. And by setting up that whole precedence, you are asking to get involved and get emotional. And before you know it, you're walking down an aisle.
Now, this book was written quite a while ago. So when he gives us some statistics, we have to kind of take them with a bit of a grain of salt. But still, I think there's probably a lot of truth that we can learn from them. On page 243, he says, one study conducted among church members revealed, and when he has church, he's talking about the LDS church, among church members revealed that there was only one divorce in every 16 marriages which were sealed in the temple, while there was one divorce in every 5.7 marriages of those who were not sealed in the temple. Now again, I'm directing my message to you, Christian, who are dating Latter-day Saints with the prospect of perhaps becoming married to that person. I'm going to tell you, this is what you are up against. Something very similar. I don't know what the statistics are right now, but this is the way they were when this book was written. This was written back in the 60s. I don't know if it's really gotten better now or worse. But let me tell you something. If you have one divorce in every 5.7 marriages with those who are not married in the temple, that would be you, because you're not going to be able to marry that spouse in the temple. So those statistics are talking about your type of a relationship. Do you really want to take a chance with that? Because even if you got married, let's say you got married, you're going to have to decide, how are those children going to be raised? Are they going to go to the LDS ward and go to primary? Or are they going to go to your church and go to a Sunday school class? You're going to have to make up your mind on that. And believe me, there are going to be strong, strong forces tearing at your relationship, because your in-laws certainly are going to want them to go to a Mormon church.
I've seen it up with friends of mine and others around me who are dealing with this right now, of potential divorces waiting in the wings. A survey that just came out a few weeks ago, a website was whymormonsleave.com, interviewed former Mormons, 3,000 of them, to find out why they left. And this is what one respondent, a male, said when asked the question, if you could speak with the top church leader, what would you ask or tell him? He said this: stop hurting marriages by driving a wedge between spouses on the issue. I have gone through hell and back and nearly divorced. We desperately need a general conference address telling spouses to not divorce an otherwise good spouse over non-belief. I have several friends who have been divorced over primarily this issue, and my own marriage is still on the rocks due to it, even though I am fully active. This is going to be a stress in the marriage from day one if you're going to get married to somebody who is mixed marriage, or down the road, if you both say you're LDS and one of you leaves, there's a possibility it's going to end up in a failure like this.
And sadly, the Mormon Church ecclesiastical leaders will intervene, and many times we have heard of bishops actually counseling the believing spouse to leave the unbelieving spouse.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to the Holy Land? It's the place where Jesus walked, a place of great significance in our Bibles. In late February of 2013, Mormonism Research Ministry and Utah Lighthouse Ministry are hosting an 11-day trip to Israel. Among other places, we will experience baptism in the Jordan River, walk through Hezekiah's Tunnel, explore Masada, and float in the Dead Sea. During our trip, we plan to spend a day with Israeli resident Joel Kramer, a former Utah pastor and current film producer, who will take us to Cave One and Qumran and Jericho as well. In addition, a 7-day pre-extension tour to Turkey is available. Your price includes all transportation, admission fees, meals and taxes, and tips. If you've never been to the Holy Land, or even if you have, join Bill McKeever, Sandra Tanner, and several local Utah pastors for the trip of a lifetime. It all begins February 19th, 2013. Visit theapologeticstudybibletour.com for more information, or call 602-788-8864.